Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about critically acclaimed books that people like, but we just don't. Of course, I'm my co-host, J.D. from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
So also with us is Red Ink.
Hawkman.
Eat a dick.
So, let me just start with the fact that I've seen lots of different books and trends in my life. Some trends I love, some trends I don't especially love, but I appreciate and I understand why people like it. You know, not exactly comics, but a great example of this is Citizen Kane, that I think is a fantastically well put together movie. It's not a movie I'll ever watch for pleasure because I saw it once and once was all I needed. It's not something, oh, I want to rewatch Citizen Kane. It's like, no, that to me, that's sort of like what Watchmen is. It's like, I've read it. It was a well-constructed piece. It was a very well-drawn piece. Gibbons did great work drawing it. But it's not a pleasurable reread. You know,
I mean,
go ahead, JT.
Well, I'm saying I enjoyed it. I agree with you, all your points there. And I think it's one of those ones where narratively it's so dense that some people just love it because it's so dense and they can't understand, you know, everything that's involved there. I enjoyed it, but I think I've read it a total of 3 times in my 20 some years of reading comic books and years in between. So,
yeah.
So, I promised JT not to actually bring up Hawkman this time, but I'm going to have to use Hawkman as an example. John Byrne recently tweeted about how irrelevant Hawkman is these days. Watchmen suffers from the same fucking thing. It comes from a date, like in the 80s,
yes,
when superhero comics weren't taken that serious, and you had Batman like, hello, chum, let's do this, chum. And Superman was all willy-nilly and shit like that. And violence and extreme pain and anger and all that shit wasn't a comic book thing. And Watchmen came out and people were amazed. Oh my God, you can actually be dramatic in comics? Well, in superhero comics at least? And that's long since over, man. Like, Watchmen since then is outdated and overrated.
Yeah, I mean, in the 80s and, you know, up until 2000s when terrorists became the greatest threat to, you know, American lives over top atomic horror. Because, I mean, in the 80s, the atomic bomb was still, like, a huge, very prevalent threat. And, like, even they referenced it in, like, they had the title for the pseudo-Watchmen in spirit sequel Doomsday Clock. Like, they have the Doomsday Clock in the original Watchmen where, you know, it's getting ever closer to midnight and that's when shit's gonna go south. And for the time, yeah, but nowadays it's nothing. Like, it's not what's the word I'm looking for?
Relevant?
That's the word, sorry. Just complete brain fart there. You know, and a lot of Alan Moore's work, like stuff like V for Vendetta, I think it still has a lot of relevance, maybe not as much as it used to.
People wearing fucking Guy Fawkes masks has driven that from relevance.
Think more so, it's definitely driven that into meme territory, but I mean, the elements of, like, you know, Big Brother and totalitarian control and such like that are, I think, still somewhat relevant.
The one thing that amuses me about V for Vendetta is, number one, the character V is this person who's all about anarchistic individuality. You know, that's why he wears the Guy Fawkes mask. Guy Fawkes is famously the person behind the gunpowder plot to blow up Parliament. And the what's his name? The brothers who are now sisters. What the fuck are their names? The Wachowskis?
Wachowskis.
Yeah. They fucking made this movie, and they falsely claimed this is the only Alan Moore adaptation that Alan Moore likes. Alan Moore immediately says, no, you fuckers got it wrong. And because the funniest thing about it is, like I said, the V in the book is all about anarchistic individuality. But at the end of the movie, you have all these people rising up, you know, lockstep with each other wearing Guy Fawkes masks. And it's like you didn't get the point. You didn't get the point. But V for Vendetta is another example. Alan Moore was in a bad mood in the 80s. He still is a very technically good writer. But that doesn't mean I enjoy all the stuff from, like, his bad mood period. Most of the stuff from his bad mood period is difficult to reread, honestly. Like, I'd rather fucking read Tom Strong.
Alan Moore has this weird obsession with fucking... What do you call it? What is that secret society?
Fool Society?
Freemasons.
Yes.
V for Vendetta is based on Freemasonry. He did a fucking comic called From Hell, which apparently Jack the Ripper was a Freemason. That's why they hit all his murderers and shit like that.
And killing the illegitimate child of the king, yes.
Yeah, and Watchmen is full of Freemason fucking shit, too. And there's all kinds of fucking things. Like, and people go, why is Watchmen full of Freemason? The owl symbol, right?
Yes. That's... Yes. I'm just saying is you can take pretty much all of the stuff that everyone critically claims of Alan Moore's compendium, all the stuff he did in the 80s, and I'll put that firmly on the list of technically well done, not rereads, overhyped. Let's talk about some other books that, again, are like everyone overhypes. Walking Dead. I started reading it. I am a fan of what, Kirkman or Kirkland?
Kirkman.
Kirkman. I was a fan of Kirkman, so I was reading Walking Dead, and Kirkman put it really well about what Walking Dead is. Basically, what if a Romero movie just keeps going? I remember distinctly he said that when he was talking about The Walking Dead. And then I realized there's a reason Romero movie stops.
Because it gets fucking boring.
Yes!
And then Kirkman found out the hard fucking way. That's what happens. I think Romero even made a comment about that before he died. And fucking, is he still alive? But I remember him making a fucking comment about it anyways. And he said something like, he told fucking Kirkman that, yeah, it ends because it gets boring after that. You say, like, basically, the movie tells you everything you need to know. Nothing, you don't need to know after that. Who gives a shit where Dave and Frank and blah, 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 where they go after that?
Yeah.
Like, you're there for their moment of crisis. And the whole Walking Dead thing is you get the same thing over and over again. You have to make another crisis. You have to make another drama.
Another big bad.
And just the same thing over and over again with a new label on it. And it got fucking boring. Like, I liked The Walking Dead when it first came out, but eventually it was like, why am I reading this? I'm just wasting my fucking money. Like, it's the same thing over and over again. But there's Negan now. What about the fucking preacher or whatever?
The mayor. The governor.
Yeah. But it's just the same rehash. It's just, oh, he's got a baseball bat. Okay. I guess that makes him different.
I will say in one thing in defense of Negan, they made that character 110% better when they cast Jeffrey Dean Morgan to play him on the show. Because that sort of character only works for so long on the printed page, but when you have that character in a live-action format like the TV series, you really need somebody with an insane amount of charisma to make anything happen with a character like that. So I will say that. But yeah, the The Walking Dead went from the title went from being just a zombie comic to being a Deadite. And by that I mean like the Deadites in Evil Dead, it just keeps going. Versus the zombies eventually are gonna rot and you know, the walker numbers will conceivably eventually the numbers will drop. But yeah, like it plateaus and then you find a higher peak and it plateaus again. And by that analogy, they should be halfway to the moon by now because it just keeps getting worse. Like you just keep having to find a worse human being to be the big bad, or you have to come up with like an even bigger herd of zombies just happens to be walking into the path of Rick and the gang.
They even figured that out in the comic. It was like, well, eventually it's all going to wear off. Winter's going to come and the bodies are all going to rot and there's going to be no more zombies. No, everyone's infected. So when everybody dies, everybody becomes a zombie, regardless if you're bit or not. So yeah. It never ends.
Yeah, that's the other thing is it's just, I know that Romero doesn't technically have rights on the Romero zombie because he never copyrighted or trademarked the movie. But it just feels like whenever someone does where they're straight up exactly 100% the Romero rules, where anyone in the world dies because of a zombie being bitten or not, it just, you know, and I know Kirkman has the creativity to do anything, but it feels like he really, really was obsessed with, I want to do a Romero movie where you keep going after cut. And that's I think he put himself into a box, painted himself into a corner and didn't realize it and tried to like scale the wall to make it work. And that's why I think Walking Dead is overrated and is not a pleasurable read.
Yeah. One title that I don't think it's overrated, but I have yet to understand why people have so much love for it, and that is Neil Gaiman's Sandman. I mean, I understand the basics of this, like the core title, in that, you know, Lord Dream, like Lord Morpheus, is captured in the early 1900s, and eventually he breaks free and he has to like reclaim his artifacts in his kingdom and you know get his family back together, the other D's like death, destiny, such like that. And I've read through several issues that are just like, I just don't get it, you know. And yet I know so many people that love Neil Gaiman. Don't get me wrong, I love Neil. Is it Gaiman or Gaiman? Because I keep saying both and I'm not even sure which is right.
I think it's Gaiman.
Okay. I love a lot of Gaiman stuff. Particularly, I love American Gods. I've read that novel twice already. I love the idea, you know, old gods, new gods, you know, set in the modern day and not purposely setting it in times of yore, because everyone seems to do that. But
the TV series disgusted me when it comes to that show.
I watched the first season and I was like, I'm good with the book. But with Sandman, like, you know, I've read the spinoffs, like the Peter Pumpkinhead one shot, Death, the High Cost of Living is on my list of top, you know, let's say top 25 best graphic novels of all time. You know, they got that. I'm excited to get a hold of that audio drama that they've put out when I'm able to find it. But can you guys explain, can anyone explain to me why people love this thing so much? Like, I try to understand. I just don't grasp it.
It's philosophical, that's why. And a lot of people can get behind philosophy. It's not anything solid. It's not a solid story, blah, blah, blah. There's a philosophy. There's a history. People read that, and they enjoy it. I'm not defending it. I don't get it either. I tried reading it, and I was bored as shit. But I can understand why others like it.
I guess that, because Maybe I just don't have a huge brain for philosophy, I guess. Like I said, a lot of, even you go back to Alan Moore, there's like V for Vendetta. Yeah, I get that. It's cool. I've enjoyed the story. I enjoy the idea of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's that first volume. I think it's a combination of the prose pieces and the artwork overall that just, I think it just, I got my, there's a little too much superhero comics in my DNA to completely enjoy the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Like, I can understand why people enjoy it, just there's still always that part of me that doesn't quite get it.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I have to give some props to. Again, it's not something I like to reread often. I think that Moore went into some really weird areas there. But only Alan Moore could take something that sounds like such a really weird, bad fan fiction-y idea and make it work as a story. For the listeners that don't know, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is essentially all these literary heroes from the 1800s teaming up together in a team crossover book, fighting various different enemies, including the Martians from War of the Worlds and other baddies. It shouldn't work, but again, with a talent like Kinda Alan does. Moore, he made it work. Still, like I said, after the first volume, it gets weird. You get to a point in like the last volume, you have Alan Quartermain and what's her name, the vampire chick,
Mina.
Yeah, Mina, fighting an evil Harry Potter when Mary Poppins shows up and kills him.
What?
Yeah.
That actually happened, Red.
I need to read this comic because I've never read it. I've seen the shitty movie and I was like, I'm never reading this fucking comic.
Yeah. I love the movie because of the campy over-the-topness, but yeah, it's just really hard to, and like I said, it's because I've got too much Superman in my comic book blood. Which isn't to say I think it's bad, it's just hard to understand.
I just want
to
see Mary Poppins kill fucking Harry Potter, that's all.
Like, I know she didn't play Mary Poppins, but as soon as you said that, I was just thinking of Maggie Smith from the Harry Potter movies. Like, fuck you, you little twat. Professor McGonagall. I can both kind of understand but don't understand why people like this next thing, and that's the Zenoscope comics.
Okay.
They have dark fairy tales and copious amounts of cheesecake, and yet I've talked to so many people that the stories are just so deep and intense, and I was like, it's Snow White wearing one of those sexy lady costumes you find at Spirit Halloween every year, except less of that. And somehow when she's going around kung fu kicking and sword swinging, nothing falls out of place. And yet people love that. Like, sorry, go ahead.
I think the main problem is people need to jerk off before they go to the comic shop.
Okay. Because a counterpoint...
Zenoscope never pretended it... It never pretended it was high art, so...
I guess a counterpoint to that a little bit is... I've known a few friends of mine over the years that are, you know, claim to be or actual practicing witches, like Wiccans... Or they practice, is it the practice Wicca or Wiccan? Like, I'm confused on the terminology.
I don't know.
But I understand why Jim Ballant's Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, has such a big following. I mean, yeah, you've got ludicrous amounts of TNA. I mean, every woman in there is allergic to more than 6 inches of fabric on their body. But being that his partner is, you know, deep into that religion, and there is a grounding in some in the mythology into the stories there, so I can understand why people like that. But it's just Zinescope, it's kung fu. I mean, and you would think I would be all for Snow White dressed in a stripper's outfit fighting evil dwarves, and yet I'm like, the fuck is wrong with you people? Like, they even turned, there was a recent miniseries came out where they turned Belle from Beauty of the Beast into this, like, Van Helsing-esque monster hunter after her encounter with the titular beast. And this company has never even come close to going out of business. And you would think this is, like, something that would have only happened in the 90s and should just be, like, a fond memory.
Not people know what they want.
So how about you, Red? What's one that you don't quite understand why people like it so much?
Deadpool. I don't get it. Like, I don't find him fucking funny. I don't find him... I read his comics and it's like LOL fucking so random fucking bullshit. And I'm like, who fucking reads this garbage?
You know what? And I love Deadpool, but I do agree with you on that. It's not even users' results may vary. It's you either like it or you don't. Now, me personally, I'm not a huge fan of the modern Deadpool, like the last 2 or 3 volumes where, you know, he's become like a internationally recognized hero and he's been part of the Avengers, and then everyone turned on him because he killed Agent Coulson during Secret Empire because, oh, Deadpool, bad. I like the original, like, technically it'd be volume 3 if the way some nerds count volumes, but the original ongoing Deadpool comic from the 90s written by Joe Kelly. Initial art was done by Joe McGinnis. That was my where he is the merc with the mouth. He hadn't quite broken the fourth wall. He was just a really, like, he was a chatty Cathy like Spider-Man. And it was gonzo over the top action. You know, like where he teams up with Daredevil. I was going to say Deadpool. Where Deadpool teams up with Daredevil and they have to fight Typhoid Mary. And Joe Kelly is the one that wrote it into continuity that the girl that Daredevil kicked out the window in Miller's Man Without Fear was actually Mary before she developed her mutant powers and her split personalities. It was just fun. Like, it was a dumb, over-the-top superhero action epic. But because Deadpool is so insanely popular, Marvel keeps, at least I think this is why, Red, is because Deadpool is so popular because he's A, cash cow, and B, Marvel's a whore. So they keep putting him out there in miniseries like, you know, Night of the Living Deadpool, Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, the sundry Deadpool series, making him the mainstay in so many teams is... You know, it's almost like the cover gimmick of the 90s where this can't possibly fail.
For me, I understand why Deadpool is popular with kids. He's the comic where my parents don't want me to read this, so I'm going to read it. Teehee. I get that. I was a kid once. But I don't get why fucking grown adults like him.
Because they don't want to grow up and it's easier to accept things like that. I mean, I know grown adults, like, kids love Jurassic Park, and I have grown adults who are like, why do kids like this? That isn't even remotely scientifically accurate. It's a fucking dinosaur, man. What's not to like? I actually got into an argument once for a friend. Well, it's not real dinosaurs. They don't have feathers. And I was like, you will take your feathers and you will fuck right off.
And I tell them back in the 90s, they didn't know fucking dinosaurs had feathers because they never found fossils with feather impressions in them at the time. So go fuck yourself. Take your opinion, turn that some bitch sideways, shine it up all nice and pretty, and shove it straight up your fucking ass. And yeah. Add a fucking dinosaur fucking feathered fossil up there, too.
Yeah. Now, I know this next one, I can understand sort of why people like things, but can either of you explain to me why everyone has so much fucking love for Kevin Maguire's Justice League? Like, the chubby-cheeked post-crisis edition of the Justice League, also known as the Bwahaha era. I just don't understand that.
You mean, I can't believe it's not Justice League?
Yeah, like, One Punch Justice League.
That, you know, is the hipster Justice League, is how I explain it. Okay,
oh,
I'm going to put it this way. Nobody fucking read that when it came out, because if they did, they'd still be around. It was garbage. It was DC was trying to do at a time where they're trying to push their B fucking characters. Then fast forward about 20 fucking years where a bunch of hipsters grew up and they remember seeing those at the comic book shelf on the fucking at the Safeway when they were children, decided to check it out and said, oh, this is kind of funny. There's a few good moments here where Booster Gold and Ted Kord, they play some jokes on John. The rest is fucking boring. The whole fucking comic, except for this one fucking joke, is boring. But this is the greatest thing from my childhood. So I'm going to talk about it like it's fucking, like God wrote it. Because I'm a hipster douchebag.
Well, that certainly clears things up. I mean, it was that comic certainly teed up like my current love, and it's not like a huge love, but like the love I have for Ted Kord now, because I remember reading that, and Booster Gold and Blue Beetle were just these two fucking idiots, and how are you guys even remotely connected to the Justice League? And then you have like, you know, like the Dan Juergens Booster Gold, and basically from 2000 onward, Ted Kord, like, then writers start treating them like, yeah, they're goofs and they're fuck-ups, but they're not complete fucking losers. So I guess I can give it that it led me to kind of dig deeper and check these guys out.
Remember that time Batman punched Guy Gardner? I remember. Remember that time that Guy Gardner goosed fucking Mary Marvel? DC never wants to talk about it, but we're going to act like it's the greatest thing ever.
He what?
Goosed Mary Marvel.
Really?
Yes.
I have never heard of that.
There's a panel where Guy Gardner and Mary Marvel are walking beside each other, and Guy Gardner gooses her and then smells his finger.
Guy Gardner's a fucking idiot.
And for anyone who doesn't know Canadian lingo, what goose means is you touch a girl's hoo-hoo place from behind.
Yes, he copped a feel.
That happened.
Yeah. I'm also starting to recall other facts of that era, like how Despero was part of the Justice League for a while because they had a control collar on his neck and he was possessed by this little, like, servant robot that the Justice League had. Or at some point, Max Lord went from just being this used car salesman to having fucking mental powers. And did he always have powers, or was that like part of a storyline or something?
He had the ability to influence people, but it was always supposed to be like, at first it was just like he could gently nudge people. Like if he wasn't already in your head, he can't make you do it. But then it became full-out, outright mind control.
Yeah.
It was a terrible era of fucking comics. And I don't know why. I completely with you, JT. I don't know why hipsters push it like it's the greatest fucking era ever.
Yeah, I'm just... See, I'm trying to think, is like, I understand why Mark Waid is popular then, what I don't understand, and again, this might just go back to hipsters as an answer, is why he's so popular now. Because it's been long enough since his seminal runs in the 90s on everything that he wrote back then that, I mean, sure, you could still draft on that fame a bit, but there's no reason why he should be as well regarded by modern fans.
Well, he doesn't write remotely the same anymore either.
Yeah.
And the other
Mark Waid used to be the guy on the edge, the guy who used to talk about shit that you shouldn't be. Now he's this cottery old grandpa that's like, get the fuck off my lawn.
He also used to be the guy that would go out of his way to. Go of his way to protect characters and stuff like that from bad characterization or even being killed off because he felt like that would betray the fans, and now he's the guy who does the killing.
Yeah.
And I don't think this holds to something I've always believed with comic writers or all writers. You should only be as good as your last work. Mark Waid is relying on lots of good karma from the 90s and aughts. Jeff Johns is still banking on the goodwill he got from that JSA run. You have to be only as good as your latest work. If your latest work is crap, then you're crap. Make something better. Don't be like, well, I made this book 10 years. It's like you're fucking Al Bundy now. You're Al Bundy and the three touchdowns. It was in high school I did three touchdowns in one game. Fuck, what'd you do in the last 30 years?
Yeah, and on the opposite end of Waid, I always balance him out with Busick. I mean, Kurt Busick is... I don't think he currently... Like, I still love Kurt Busick's work. And he comes out of that same era as Mark Waid, but I think it's by product that he hasn't really worked on much of anything outside of Astro City. Like, he stayed in his lane. He does work here and there, but mostly it's that. And I don't know, he might have the same opinions as Mark Waid. He just doesn't get preachy about them at every opportunity.
Excuse me? Busick? Not pre... What?
Ben, listen to what I just said. I'm not saying he isn't preachy or he doesn't have opinions. Just you don't hear about it. At least I haven't heard about it as much as I've heard about Wade's opinions. I'm not being ignorant to the fact that he probably has opinions. I mean, name me one person in this world that doesn't. Just, I know fuck all about Kurt Busick's opinions by virtue of the fact that he just doesn't get on a pop soapbox the way Waid does. That's all I'm saying. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people I know in my own life, hell, people I work with that have got opinions that I'd be like, the fuck are you talking about? Why are we even talking about this? It's just, yeah. But Waid's like, I love reading Mark Waid stuff. Anytime I heard Mark Waid was on a title, I'm definitely checking it out because that's how much draw he had. Now it's like, dear God, is this going to be like his Daredevil run? And I pray that it isn't because, dear God, if not for Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars, we would have had Ben Affleck. Fucking Matt Murdock swinging around San Francisco in a snazzy suit and a tie with no mask, openly calling himself Daredevil, because that's where Waid was going with that.
The biggest problem there was Mark Waid wanted to tell a story that wasn't a Daredevil story, and they wouldn't give him a book other than Daredevil, so guess what happened? Waid's biggest issue with any of his books, because I tried to get hyped about Champions, because I was like, oh, it's going to be like Marvel's version of Young Justice. And then it wasn't. It was terrible. It was preachy. It was condescending. It was rude. It took the characters that I was interested in and thought were fun, made them horrible and stiff. It took characters that I was indifferent about and made me hate them. Not sure where Champions is on the love-hate scale with the rest of the world, but I don't like it.
Well, sir, I don't like it.
The original Civil War gets a lot of praise. Let's talk about that. I did not like 80% of Civil War. Biggest problem with Civil War is the main writer of that, of Civil War, the main architect, was Mark Millar, was it not?
I believe so. I'm just going to look that up while you keep talking.
Because I remember distinctly Millar got really mad that the majority of the comic reading public was anti-registration. While Millar was purposefully pro-registration. And in the books that Millar had direct control over, he tried to make Cap seem very unsympathetic. And the only time that the two sides gave good arguments was a side book that was done, where you had Cap and Tony talking in the graveyard after Goliath, or Black Goliath, whatever the fuck he was called that year, his death. They were talking in a graveyard after the funeral, and it was like a parley ceasefire at that moment, and at that moment you had Tony explaining why he believed in registration. He gave some points that were valid based on his past. He explained about how one time he flew his armor drunk, and he almost killed civilians, and it was actually fucking Machine Man that stopped the rubble from hitting the civilians, and how he felt ashamed about that. So it was always in the back of his head about the responsibility required. And Cap explained how, you know, whenever you're in a situation that's dangerous, you can't guarantee safety.
And it was Millar, by the way, Ben.
Yes. And that, it was only like the ancillary side books where you have like a good piece of characterization moment. But in the main Civil War books, it's basically, you're an idiot if you don't like registration. Registration, good. Even though for the last 30 years in Marvel Comics, we're telling you, mutant registration, bad. Racism, bad. But superhero registration, good. Good.
Yeah.
It's not only that. If he's trying to make registration good, he did a really bad fucking job of it. Because for one thing, you put Captain America as the antagonist. It's fucking Captain America. Everybody's going to get behind him. He's known for being the guy who always does the right thing. If he was probably behind the registration, I'm for it. People might get behind him. You would have more people behind him, but no. You stuck Captain America as a bad guy, and that's where you fucked up. Maybe it would be 50-50. 50-50 on registration, 50-50 not registration. But no, it was more like fucking 90, fucking 10.
Yeah.
I think I liked the core idea of Civil War, like the registration. You have heroes on both sides that agree and disagree with it, and I think that was an interesting tack. The it was too many cooks. That's the problem. Is you have, you know, if Mr. Millar was the only one writing and had editorial control and some of the tie-in stuff, it might have been a little more cohesive. But in the long run, it's just too many people writing. Like the core mini And one of the Civil Wars, one of the sides is involved Ben Urich and this new female reporter. They had an issue where they get an interview with Captain America amidst all this. And she starts bitching him out. It's like, well, have you taken a look outside? When's the last time you logged onto MySpace? Like, and just starts, like, this is before people were really calling millennials millennials. She just starts millennial bitching at him about, this isn't your America. It's didn't even come close to the idea. It's not his America. It's like what America could slash should be instead of, being self-obsessed and all that. It was that issue and the miniseries, the only things I really read out of that. And they even had the story itself shouldn't have gone. It's almost Clone Wars or Clone Saga length of stupidity. And it could have been so much shorter. Like they had a one shot, like one of Marvel's what ifs. They had a one shot. What if Civil War ended differently? And they had two stories where one is they get to that fight where they launch what did they call the Robo-Thor that Reed Richards created? Ragnarok?
Ragnarok, yeah.
Yeah, that where Ragnarok is let loose by this jumpy S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, and instead of it all going to shit and the war continues, Cap protects Tony, Tony backs Cap up, all the heroes come down on Ragnarok to take him out, and they part ways, and they sit down, they talk, and come up with a better way. I mean, ultimately, I don't think it really works where they say Cap's going to be the one to know everyone's identities and we're going to have all these redundancies, and the president and top bitch Maria Hill are all like, no, this is wrong. We're not happy about this. And Cap said, well, that's the best reason why this is the best idea, because no one is completely happy. And that would have taken about half the time.
And he also pointed out in this, I think this is a vision the Watcher revealed, that if they went down this route, that the entire superhero community would have been prepared and ready for Secret Invasion.
Yeah. And they even have, like, the one-panel shots. Like, you see it truly becoming an Avengers world, and the Avengers, it's not just Cap going up against Alexander Luskin / Red Skull, it's every hero in the Marvel Universe working together and making the world a truly better place. And that, like I said, at the point that happened in the one shot, Civil War is about halfway through. You could have cut all that bullshit in half if you put a little more thought into the narrative that you're working on. But again, we got to have one shots and spinoffs and alternate covers, and every Marvel title had that half a cover thing where the bottom half is just like one color and says Civil War for like a year and change.
Well, also, like I said, Millar really hated the fact that the audience, the core comic audience, the core Marvel comic audience, who, as I said, were taught for the last 30 years that mutant registration was bad, we're all of a sudden supposed to be like superhero registration good. He was really confused by that. And so he wasn't willing to cut it short when he realized it wasn't going his way.
Yeah. And like I said, interesting idea. I certainly like the idea. It's just too many cooks and too many different agendas trying to get their two cents in on this story, which is half the reason in most of these crossovers, from Civil War sequel to Infinity and Secret Invasion and Dark Reign and every other large scale Marvel crossover event that's come down the pipe in the last 10, 15 years is too many people are trying to talk all at once, and there's no one singular voice like calling the shots. And yet people still love this because, oh, it's so deep. It's so thought provoking. I was like, no, not at all. So I don't know.
It's the usual thing that Marvel does. It's Oh, we have a crossover? It's popular? Make every single comic have to do the crossover now.
Yeah.
We have to make them buy every single comic so they can know everything about it. Well, isn't that going to mean there's like going to be 50 guys changing the narrative? Well, I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the main Civil War mini, you have Cap, Captain America, Iron Man, the Avengers, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, and X-Men. That's outside of the core mini. That's only six titles that I think really need to be involved. And most of those side story miniseries could have been easily contained as like 5 or 6 page, you know, backup stories in any of those may like tie in issues from the main titles. And the rest of the Marvel universe could have gone on its merry. But hey, it's the guy that wrote the Ultimates, and that comic was the bee's knees, so let's let him do whatever the fuck he wants.
Ultimates is another book where I think the first volume is an enjoyable read, but I think that fizzled out really quick. Volume 2, not so good. Volume 3 is garbage. I feel like lots of people...
Well, he didn't write Volume 3.
Absolutely true, absolutely true. Well, Volume 3 was it Loeb?
Yeah,
it was Loeb.
Loeb
and...
didn't even fucking realize he's writing a different universe. He's wrote the regular fucking Marvel
yeah,
universe.
Yeah, he had Thor all of a sudden being Doth Verily, and it's like this is Ultimate Thor. He's like a dude bro.
And Venom shows up and fights them. It's like Venom.
There is no Venom.
He's not a symbiote anymore. He's a weird fucking experiment thing.
I mean, he's not a symbiote as we know him in the Earth 616. He's a symbiote that was created by Peter Parker and Eddie Brock's dad in the lab.
With Ben Reilly. Don't forget Ben Reilly.
Yeah, and then, yeah, we could do a whole episode about Ultimate Spider-Man. Yeah, it was written by Loeb, art by Joe Mataraya, and the mastermind behind everything was, of course, Ultimate Doctor Doom after he got rid of his goat legs.
All right.
I mean, there's so many more. We'll have to do this again in the future once we come up with more.
He was just regular Doctor Doom.
Yeah, he wasn't even Ultimate Doctor. He didn't have the power to puke fire retardant.
No, they just he stopped doing that after he got rid of his what happened to your legs? What, you think Doom could not fix this? And that was the only explanation they ever gave for why Doom stopped puking acid and firing like metal needles off his arm like some sort of giant mutant hedgehog. And you know, he controlled the Ultimate Beetle who stole Venom. And
so Dr. Doom is no longer Torgo?
No.
The Hunting Torgo theme.
Nope.
I wonder if anyone in the audience gets the reference.
I don't get the fucking reference.
Manos, the Hands of Fate.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Don't go there, Red. Trust me, you will save yourself so many sleepless nights if you don't go any further.
Fly, you fools, you know not the peril. All right, I'll just leave it at that. But this is our episode talking about books that are critically acclaimed that we just don't get or we just don't think deserve the praise. This is your old Spen.
JT from Saskatoon.
Writing.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.